This is Dark Journalist. It's fantastic to have so many of you here tonight. It's a great crowd already. And as usual, I'm joined by the lovely Olivia.
Hi, everybody.
And this is a special Sunday night broadcast because of all the developments that are going on around these various state of emergencies and such. And it brings together a lot of research I've been doing on what I'll call deep state propaganda wars, which is the title of this episode, which is kind of an addendum or a pathway between episode 83 and 84 of the X series. But it's really a special live broadcast to bring us all up to date on some of the things that we see happening here, because we need to keep abreast of these developments as they come and also take them on in a calm fashion, but in a very deliberate fashion, because we're seeing a lot of news that is manipulated. And you know, no big surprise. So earlier this week, we put out an episode with Dr. Nick Begich going over the coronavirus and the implications of it, mostly to supply chains and financial systems, and talking about, you know, the kind of impact that those forces that are out there would get from this happening. Now, there's a lot of different theories about where this came from. I'll touch on those a little bit tonight, but we'll, you know, we have the official story that it came out of some lab in Wuhan in China. But we're also going to track into a case that has to do with a Harvard professor and his connections with giving chemistry secrets over to the Chinese. And he is under arrest now. That, you know, they arrested him about three blocks from here. Now, what's interesting is in the middle of all this is the thing that happened in the run-up to this announcement of this. And then we heard some other things about the Chinese premier lying about when this started, and some people catching on to that. And one of these billionaires who caught on to it, I tweeted this out earlier, he's now disappeared. So we know that there's some cover-ups happening here. And we know there's some really big moves going on. And I'll tell you that what I see, just as a from analyzing this since it's come up, which is it seems to be that something is taking place for sure medically. We have stats and all the rest of it. But there seems to be this enormous hype around what don't seem to be very heavy-duty stats. You know, you don't close down Italy for nothing. Of course, Italy tends to operate in a more fascist, you know, type of government than we would have here. So we don't expect those types of tactics to happen in America. But what I do feel, and it's very important to get across, is that the kind of global moves around this, and there's a lot of different opinions on every side. I'm not going to try to put forward a theory about what's behind this, but I'm going to show how it can be exercised in such a way that would be detrimental to the public welfare. And one of the most important pieces of that is something that Professor Scott, who I cite very often on this program, who's a University of California, Berkeley professor, famous for coining the deep state and his incredible books, American Deep State and The Road to 9/11, among others. But one of the things that he talks about that we need to keep our minds on here is something called piggybacking. So, for example, in major deep events like 9/11 and things leading up to 9/11, on the day of 9/11, in fact, there were all these exercises that were planned. And they were military exercises. And then what happens is something comes in, you know, having the knowledge that this is taking place, and they piggyback on this operation. Something's actually happening, and then something else. So you could have a very, you know, kind of a trail of this flu-like, you know, pandemic coming out for the public, and then something else moves in to say, let's give this a test run while that's happening, and people get alerted to it. So the thing that they could be rolling out is this deep central emergency control, and we're going to get into emergency powers tonight. This is crucial for us because it goes along with many of the things we talk about on this show in terms of something in America that's called continuity of government. since we're seeing this exercised around the world, we have to imagine that there's more than just America involved in utilizing these emergency powers. And at the same time, we have a lot of people caught in the middle, medical professionals, politicians, who are just doing their best with the information they're getting told. And so there's a conglomerate effect, but the effect that's been happening, and it happens specifically hardcore today, is all of these lockdowns and all of these no social gatherings and very inconsistent policy in relation to the numbers that we're seeing. I think that's important to state, regardless of how far along you think this is or how lethal or whatever. The actual stats on the ground do not support the actions on the ground. So here we get into looking at what's piggybacking on top of this public health crisis. And we're going to get deep into that tonight. Professor Scott got deep into it today, and he made some public comments. And he is pointing us to research that is showing that when people do the kind of numbers crunching on this thing, it's pretty much already in its last phases. And he doesn't claim to be a medical professional, but he's sure to cite some very good ones. So we need to get our heads kind of wrapped around this. And this is going to be an important episode for doing that. I have a lot of information. And then I'm going to talk about how since 2012, we've been under new laws in the United States that allow the government to actually propagandize the population. Now, this is an interesting twist and a change that was really quite severe, if you look at it. That was over 8 years ago. And we have to now look at things when they come up, such as this major public scare, health scare, and see how much of it is propaganda versus how much is the real thing on the ground, looking for good answers and not looking to, just accuse the powers that be of doing all this, but really pointing out their actions and looking for their answers. And when we find their answers, wanting going beyond them and seeing through them to what is taking place behind them. So this is kind of something that we're all engaged in. We're going to try a little bit of this tonight because we need to find some kind of a logic in dealing with things. But in the broader picture, looking at deep state propaganda, we're certainly going to see that it's been used heavily on the public in America and in the world. And, I trace a lot of that back to the Kennedy assassination when the media really went in this direction, defying logic and working with the intelligence agencies to cover up details. That type of thing has created over the years now, coming in some 56 years, 57 years since that incident, an off-balance situation between the public and the leadership, where the public doesn't quite trust the leadership, and the leadership has not proven itself to be trustworthy. WMDs in Iraq, these are the things that the CIA has given us, didn't quite pan out that way. Lone shooters, doesn't quite pan out that way. So we have a series of things that come up that kind of protect the institutions. And so I'm going to reiterate the rules around dark journalism. They're really quick. Three bullet points. You have the official story. In the case of 9/11, 19 hijackers somehow took over the entire United States Air Force, which the Soviet Union and the Germans and the Chinese and the Japanese before them were never able to do. But these guys pulled it off. They caused 3,000 deaths of American citizens. That was the official story on 9/11. The secondary story, which is often called the conspiracy theory, but is brought forward by writers, researchers, professors, and they poke holes in that official story. This is the secondary story, and it's a crucial place for us to find answers. The media often will call it the conspiracy theory, but we can see that the official story in these deep events don't always hold up very well. And then finally, you have under that junk conspiracy, or what I call third force narratives. The junk conspiracy will give you something wild, like no planes were used on 9/11, for example. And then people looking at that with a logical mind are like, well, that's too far. I'm going to go back to that official story because it makes me safe, at least it makes some sense. So this is the nature of the problem that we kind of come across. So when we have any major deep event like what we're seeing transpire now, the rules of dark journalism apply and apply well. In this case, we have the official story about this. They started off originally with bat soup, if you recall, and then the story migrated. And then we heard about this professor giving secrets away. And then we heard about the potential that Chinese had bought this virus to work on in their own labs. And then we've heard other things and rumors about bioweapons and all the rest of it. But fundamentally, it's understood that there was something in some lab that got cooked up somewhere and that it's gotten out. What we have as the secondary story underneath is, like I was saying, things like the case of the Harvard professor. You know, there's a lot of detail there. And then the really kind of wild conspiracies just go off the charts. So what we have to do is kind of sort through the junk conspiracies and the rhetoric and the official version, which does not add up. And so we're going to start with something that Professor Scott wrote, and this is from today. And I'm going to read the article that he pointed to, and we're going to see a lot of the contradictions coming out of the media versus from the experts. And thank you all for being here. I know this is a great crowd. We're pleased to be bringing this to you on Sunday night, which is not usually the night that we're on, but this is going to be important. Okay. Quote from Professor Scott. Where's my pen, Olivia?
Oh, no red pens.
I know it's close by.
I know it's close by.
Quote, I am posting this essay not because I am in any way a scientist able to vouch for its accuracy, but because of in a time of great uncertainty, thank you, with the big media yawing from underestimating our crisis to now giving us the gloomiest of predictions, a scientist has conducted a plausible analysis of available incidence and fatality statistics and reached the conclusion that, contrary to the grim forecast being branded about, the spread of the virus will come to a halt. That's very important. The calming messages Levitt sent to his friends in China were translated into Chinese and passed from person to person, making him a popular subject for interviews in the Asian nation. His forecast turned out to be correct. The number of new cases reported each day started to fall as of February 7th, as he predicted. A week later, the mortality rate started falling as well. I'm often chided by my friends for unwarranted optimism, but weren't there also anticlimactic finishes to the related SARS and the MERS epidemics? Is that true or not? And that's where his intro ends. Here's the article he cites. And this came out 2 days ago, and I'm not too familiar with this publication, but they do a lot of, it's Jewish and Israel News, Al Jamayer. And the article is by Ari Libsker, and it's called Corona is Slowing Down, Humanity Will Survive. Well, that's nice, says biophysicist Michael Levitt. That's it there. I'm going to read from this liberally. Nobel laureate Michael Levitt, an American-British-Israeli biophysicist who teaches structural biology at Stanford University, spends much of his time in Tel Aviv, unexpectedly became a household name in China recently, offering the public reassurance during the peak of the country's coronavirus outbreak. Levitt did not discover a treatment or a cure, just did what he does best, crunch the numbers. The statistics led him to the conclusion that contrary to the grim forecast being branded about, the spread of the virus will come to a halt. Now remember, I'm going to pause here on this article. We have the president announcing a state of emergency. We have a number of states doing that. The mayor of Boston just did that. And, as we go down the West Coast, we see major states like California doing the same thing and banning large gatherings. And, you know, you can already see the effect this is having. And we have people rustling over paper towels and things of this nature because they've been scared out of their wits every day by the bombardment of, you know, the coronavirus is coming for you. Okay, continuing. The calming messages Levitt sent to his friends in China were translated into Chinese and passed from person to person, making him a popular subject for interviews in the Asian nations. His forecast turned out to be correct. I'll reiterate this. The number of new cases reported each day started to fall as of February 7th. A week later, the mortality rate started falling as well. He might not be an expert in epidemiology, but Levitt understands calculations and statistics. He told Calculist in a phone interview early this week. The interview was initially scheduled to be held at the blah, blah, blah. But after he caught a cold that wasn't corona, he remarked, the interview was rescheduled to be held over the phone. Even though he believes the pandemic will run its course, Levitt emphasizes his support for all the safety measures currently being taken. Levitt received his Nobel Prize in Chemistry in 2013 for the development of multiscale models. Okay, so when the pandemic broke out, we're going to move down here, same article, Brosh, who is his wife and a researcher of Chinese art, wrote to friends in China to support them. When they answered us describing how complicated their situation was, I decided to take a deeper look at the numbers in hope of reaching some conclusion, Levitt explained. So he took this upon himself to research. This is important too, because since he wasn't under any official umbrella, he was more freely able to explain his findings. Here we go. The rate of infection in the virus in the Hubei province increased by 30% each day. That was a scary statistic. I'm not an influenza expert, but I can analyze numbers, and that is exponential growth. At this rate, the entire world should have been infected with it within 90 days. But then suddenly the trend changed. When Levitt started analyzing the data on February 1st, Hubei had 1,800 new cases each day, and within 6 days, this number had reached 4,700. He said then on February 7th, the number of new infections started to drop linearly and did not stop. A week later, the same happened to the numbers of the deaths. This dramatic change in the curve marked the median point and enabled better prediction of when the pandemic will end. Based on that, I concluded that the situation in all of China will improve in 2 weeks, and indeed, now there are very few infectious cases. Levitt compared the situation to bank interest. If on the first day a person receives 30% on their savings, the next day 29%, and so forth, you understand eventually you'll not earn very much. It's going to go to zero. The messages his friends translated made waves in China and people wanting to make sure he indeed wrote it. So he confirmed that and so on. And then it went down to 2.2 people a day, and now it's something like 0.4. So as he's gone into this, he said, under these circumstances, a carrier will only infect 1.5 people every 3 days, and the rate will keep going down. And so he gave a great explanation, which is this Diamond Princess cruise, which was a virus-stricken cruise ship. But he said that even under those conditions where everyone was getting, you know, the air conditioning was sending all of the oxygen and germs everywhere and everybody was in that closed environment, you know.
Petri dish.
Exactly. The infection rate did not top 20%. That's very important because the kind of panic that they're throwing around, if you had all those people jammed together and that's as high as it got, then obviously the scare of this is dramatically overstated. Let's start there. And then he talked about the explosion of cases in Italy, but he said the estimates, it is a result of a higher percentage of elderly people than in China, France, or Spain. Furthermore, Italian culture is very warm. They have a rich social life. And he went on this kind of model, basically, which is that it's more elderly culture. And then he didn't want to make global forecasts, but he said the number of new infections in China will soon reach zero. Okay. And then he already was talking about South Korea has passed the median point. We can already see the end. Regarding the rest of the world, he said it will end with those when all those who are sick will only meet people who have already been infected. The goal is not to reach the situation the cruise ship experienced. And but he said even under those circumstances, again, it did not seem very potent. And you know, the way that it's being described. And so this was him crunching the numbers and really getting to the bottom of it. His research is a real problem for the powers that be because of the way that they're portraying it. And even in the most updated article, from this is from ABC News, coronavirus live updates, U.S. death toll reaches 61. Now, it's terrible to lose anyone and to, you know, for flu or for anything. But you know that the flu cases every year take far more than that. And so the number of cases and the number of deaths, there's 3,244 confirmed cases of novel coronavirus in the United States and at least 61 coronavirus-related deaths. But on balance, you know, we have things on the books that do far worse damage than that, and we never shut down society to this extent. So you have to ask yourself, what is the motivation here? And it seems like we were looking at something that is trying to roll out the plan for how a pandemic, if a pandemic hit, a real one, how people would respond. And they're collecting a lot of data about all this. But now they're reaching into a state in America, and I'm only going to speak for America because it's the only thing I've really been studying up close. In America, what we're seeing is they're going from sort of monitoring the situation and the media being the scare tactic, and the administration really playing it kind of cool for a while, and the CDC really not going over the top in the beginning. And the hysteria of the media has carried this thing to a level where you saw people beating up each other in supermarkets. There's no cause for that. And the looking at the health stats, you know, we start to see all of these things like the country, the states, the cities using emergency powers. So we have to understand what emergency powers are all about. And that isn't to denigrate the work that the people in the middle are doing trying to figure things out. But we're trying to give them something to work with because they're getting a very narrow feed in the media on this. And the middle managers are getting a very narrow feed. So let's see if we can reach around all of this to try to go deep and find out where exactly the truth on this can be found. And again, you know, not stating it as medical professionals, but more from the propaganda standpoint. Where is this leading to? This is a crucial thing that we need to ask ourselves in any situation, political, military, and otherwise. Now, I'm going to mention a few reasons why that's true. For years, we had expert after expert, news programs, CNN, everyone else telling us, Monsanto's great. There's no problem with Monsanto's. GMOs are good for you. There's no problem with any of that. Then they started to find out, well, these things cause cancer. Then Monsanto started to get hit with a lot of lawsuits because people started to look into this a little more. While Monsanto was creating things like Roundup and Frankenfish. and finally, you know, they got into such trouble that Bayer had to take them over just to pay off the lawsuits. Now, Monsanto parent company Bayer faces thousands of Roundup cancer cases after $2 billion verdict. All those experts told us there weren't any cancer-causing factors. They all were mistaken. Now, it's a matter of court record that they're mistaken. The Roundup did cause cancer. Now they're paying out billions because it did. So we can't afford to be behind the curve of the experts and just surrender all of our authority. At the same time, I think we need to look reasonably at what they're doing and see how they're making progress. So, but it needs to be a balance, and there needs to be a kind of central accountability to the citizens. Over and over again, we have to do it because we're seeing other things happen. For example, the Fed just invested and injected $1.5 trillion, yeah, it's trillion with a T, into the financial markets. And now they're selling bonds again. Well, you know, this is how we got the 2008 crash. And the banks were like, oh, we took all this money and we sold people bad stuff, bail us out. And the Fed did that. And they not only bailed us out, they failed out. I like that even better. You know, it's true. They bailed out the foreign banks. their friends. It had nothing to do with American interests. So again, you know, we look at the research of somebody like Catherine Austin Fitz, who sees $21 trillion missing from the government. And then we start to say, huh, so they're bailing out these financial institutions even before the crashing because they don't want to see that kind of trouble. And yet, basically, it is in essence just giving them money. So we're looking at a very dicey situation that takes into account financial, military, media resources, municipal resources. So this whole thing has to be brought together instead of just like, oh, it's crazy corona, you know, virus, and you have to, you know, make sure that you just practice social distancing and all these kinds of things. I mean, they're really laying it on thick. And maybe they have their reasons, but the reasons that I'm seeing don't add up with the stats that they're giving out. So we have a real problem in perception versus the reality on the ground. And they are achieving this kind of anxiety across the world with this. So we need to look deeper and find out what it is we're actually dealing with. But we also need to see what's going on now, militarily, financially, politically. There's even a debate tonight with Biden and Bernie.
I didn't even know
Bernie.
That. Really?
They've gone so far off the front page, it's not even funny. But let's look at a few kind of other factors that will play in here. And this gets more to what Professor Scott termed as the deep state, who come in and piggyback on these types of panics and try to make the best for themselves. Okay, let's take a look at this. This is an article from today. It's called from The Intercept by Murtaza Hussein. Amid coronavirus chaos, U.S. and Iran edge closer to war. That's true. Well, you remember at the beginning of the year, the CIA director whispered into Trump's ear, assassinate the number two man in Iran. It'll save us a lot of trouble in the long run. And he did it. That's not a legal action. And then Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who from his actions, I said on this program on a number of occasions, should be fired, came forward and said there was an imminent threat. That's why we did it. Then later admitted to lying and saying there was no imminent threat. But, you know, when you deal with Iran, there's always an imminent threat. Now, when we look at that, nobody, you know, we can't sit here and say that we appreciate the Iranian regime. However, we don't have the right to go around executing their number two people. Now, a number of incidents have happened since this corona scare, which have been going on in the background. And it's been this kind of hit and run, shoot 'em up war between the Americans and the Iranians, mostly taking place over Iraq, which, you know, we had some problems with there. If you go back to 2003, and we got stuck in a quagmire there, and we still have 5,000 troops there. And this has the potential to draw us back in there deeply and go after Iran, which would be the biggest foreign policy blunder in American history. So we need to know where this is coming from. And we know that this push, which, you know, the Netanyahu administration was very happy about because they want to get rid of Iran. Because they say that they don't want them to develop a nuclear program, which I can appreciate. However, there was a deal in place. It wasn't a great deal, but they had a deal in place to keep Iran nuclear free. Now, the interesting thing is, it's well known that also outside of the edicts of the UN, that Israel developed over 200 nuclear weapons that they have. So it feels hypocritical when they go around and tell people don't develop nuclear weapons. Nobody in the Middle East should have nuclear weapons. And the United States should not have withdrawn from the treaty with the Soviet Union that they established with the Soviet Union in 1987. Now with Russia, they broke out of that treaty, which had been in place for 30 years. Now the IMF treaty is gone. And so the nuclear race is on again. This is crazy. These are the types of things that are going on in the background. And then, you know, when you think about the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, they came through with $750 billion for the military. And we had Democrats and Republicans alike voting for that. No dissenters, nothing. Everybody right along party lines just jumped in. Everybody said, this is great. There was no division there. And yet, where do you come up with $750 billion during a time where there's no actual war on the ground? That's problematic. Where's all that money going? So now you have twice that amount injected into the banks, $1.5 trillion. That was pretty quick. And the Fed says, well, we have the ability to understand what's going on with the markets, and we know where we need to go. Yeah, as long as you don't take money out of the U.S. Treasury and give it to your friends, it's fine. So we'll see. But is this just another setup to say, oh, Corona injured the banks, and the banks need all this money? In the meantime, you know, they're giving out canned goods in Boston for people. you know, they're not giving them a tax, you know, sort of, hey, here's a year off your taxes, for example, in Massachusetts or in California, which they sure could use it. But don't worry, you'll have some canned goods. Interesting trade there. Probably not so good. So that Intercept article I do recommend because I think it gets us into what's happening in the background. And I know that Secretary, Assistant Secretary Fitz, when she saw this activity in the past couple of days, tweeted something out along the lines of, don't use this sort of media pandemic as a cover, as air cover for starting a war with Iran. Let's make sure that they don't. And if that stuff starts to happen, let's make it known that we don't want that to happen. I think that's very crucial. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist program. This is a special live stream on deep state propaganda wars. And we are going deep. Of course, we had to open with everything that's been happening with the coronavirus and some of the political machinations behind it and the announcements of state of emergency and all the rest. We're going to talk about emergency powers and some of the history of how they've been utilized and hopefully give you some good information so that we can kind of keep an eye on this as we go. Now, we're going to be taking questions in the second half of the program, and you can ask them in caps, and Miss Olivia will put those together. How are we doing out there?
Doing great. A lot of intensity in the ideas room tonight.
I can imagine.
A lot of passion.
I can appreciate that. And most important thing, and this is something that Dr. Nick Begich told us earlier this week, is to keep calm and to recognize that, you know, as long as we hold the government accountable on this, we're going to come out on the right side. It's when we trust them too implicitly that we get into trouble and they start to assume powers that go far outside of the bounds of the Constitution. And we are a constitutional government, therefore we are going to have to rectify that situation should it occur. Now, let's go from here, unless you have something you want to jump in with.
Well, John Kay would like to get to the heart of the matter, oh, yeah, which I appreciate. Who do you think is actually behind the stage-managed panic and why?
That's the $64,000 question. I like to go with this, with the idea that something took place, and I'm going to get into how it may have happened. And I've heard a couple of scientists go on record about this. And then something else is piggybacking on it, as we said. But it certainly, there are mysterious and unexplained aspects to it, for sure. You know, I think it's important to take it seriously as far as it goes. But I don't think that surrendering all of these emergency powers blindly with no questions is a good idea. And I think that it gets to a point, a level, where that's not going to be an option. So, you know, we need to be able to ask the right questions and get the right answers. Hopefully we can unwind it and get some of that. I want to do something. I have to mention this one right off the bat, which is, you know, when you see this, something's going on. This is Queen Elizabeth flees Buckingham Palace over coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
That's problematic. First of all, Buckingham Palace should be pretty safe, but if you were piggybacking an op of an actual pandemic that, say, was cooked up in somebody's lab somewhere that they were trying to get information on to see what kind of a database we could get about this, how did people react to this, and so on, you'd go through the motions. you'd run through it, and this would be part of those motions. So this is a very interesting sign, I would say. There's also the sign of people in the media absolutely losing their minds. This one was the Washington Post's Jennifer Rubin, and I was reading this morning. I could not believe what I was reading. She wrote that there will be less Democrat coronavirus deaths. Kid you not. And her reasoning was, those Democrats know how to fall in line with their government that much easier. And so she's saying, hey, Republicans, there'll be more dead Republicans over this. This is the way that some of these people are thinking and trying to use it as an advantage and all the rest. So we really have to keep an eye on what the media is all about. Of course, the Washington Post is a CIA publication, so now we know the kind of people that they're hiring over there.
Are you going to talk more about Queen Elizabeth?
Well, we'll get back to her, but I do feel that, you know, that this happened is significant.
Okay.
I'll put it to you that way. And certainly there have been some other interesting
pieces. Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is the rats are fleeing the ship. You know, they're going to safe havens.
Certainly, well, there's the whole thing with Harry and Meghan and all that that took place where they left. And
what did they know and when did they know it?
It's kind of interesting.
I can tell you this much. I've been following UK tweets, and they are ready for a revolution over there. They are so angry.
Yeah, it seems to be that this is interesting, too, because they've been deeper into it. You know, we've been kind of spared some of the things that are happening in the UK. They really have been deep in the soup. And the multiculturalism that was forced on them and then not managed very well, and a number of other issues.
Well, and they've been so tense because of Brexit.
Yes.
So, you know, for years, yes, this has been going on. So this is the last thing they need. They're just trying to calm down.
That's interesting, because you might look at the Queen Elizabeth thing as sort of a dry run to what happens if she needs to bail out. And I think that somebody said it was the Queen bug out. So we can look at that one. I want to point out this tweet, which is from Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has done a fantastic job of showing the kind of courage that his dad had, really. But in his case, it is looking into this vaccines safety issue, which I think is quite important for us to think about in relation to what's happening now, because the vaccine safety issue goes right to the heart of everything that we're seeing with corona, because, of course, the next step is the corona vaccine. And then what happens if you don't take it? And, you know, they've been talking for a while about these mandatory vaccines, and we've seen a lot of pushbacks, and they got rid of the religious exemption in Maine recently. And in New Jersey, they tried this. In California, they got it. So what's the big push? What are they doing? Well, we already know that they're giving children 78 vaccines by the time they're 18 now. And according to Robert F. Kennedy Jr., they have 300 in the works. So this is a money model. And if we go back in vaccine history, you know, the vaccine companies were exempted from lawsuits in 1986 by a congressional act. And the idea really was that they were getting sued so often that they were like, oh, we're just going to close up our tents the way Monsanto had to sell out to Bayer. And what happened is quite interesting, because the Congress and the Senate got together and said, well, in order to keep them robust and at the ready in case anything happens, we need to guarantee them all these protections. And as a result, they've abused those protections. And so it's very hard to sue the vaccine makers. And we've seen this kind of large scale problem happening as a result of excessive vaccination, and then we have all these links between vaccination and autism, and then the media will try to say that was discredited, and you look into it and it's not. So you have to kind of look at this and really weigh it out and say we're at kind of an impasse. And so people like RFK Jr. really leading the charge on that, and here's his tweet. What are we doing to our children? CBS News reports sharp unexplained rises in depression, anxiety in American teens. Shouldn't we ask whether these trends are associated with the neurotoxic aluminum we are giving young teens in Gardasil? Now, there's a lot of truly hazardous health effects from Gardasil. And they have pushed this heavily from the vaccine maker side. They pay off the politicians to say this is good. They get behind them. They don't literally bribe them, but they, you know, donate to their campaigns and all the rest of it. And then the politicians are obliged to come out and say, hey, these guys are good. They're safe, you know, and then everybody, you know, takes them and hits the depression, anxiety and all the rest of it. Then you get all these school shootings. And they don't turn around and say, you know, we should really look at those pharmaceutical companies. They say, we should really take away those guns. Well, that's not really logical, is it? So we have a lot of narratives that are pushed. And I think that we've seen a series of them over the past two decades and before. But I think that they've made certain progress, these forces. And you know, we'll call them deep state forces. But I think with this, what's happening now, they're trying to make a leap, which is they're trying to get data on what happens in a societal panic that has global implications. And they're trying to see to what extent the public will trust the government on one hand and how far they can take that. You remember when they were pushing heavily for certain types of vaccine exemptions to be removed, and people just started homeschooling, and they try to go after homeschooling, and people push back and said, you know, don't mess with my children. And that's where this kind of force, this deep state force, doesn't have, you know, it just needs to make that next margin. And they don't always have, you know, they've been kind of dropping the mask a lot lately and just going for it. So we need to know when the pushback is on and how to handle it. So I think that's what we're looking at here. At the same time, we need to do it in a balanced fashion so that the kind of legitimate middle managers that are taking care of things can, you know, work through their process and we can see how far they get. But what we need to do is get, as I was saying, get behind that story, reach through these things to find something that would be useful even to those people who are asking questions in the middle. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist X series, and this is a special live broadcast that is dealing with deep state propaganda. And I'm going to show how we were allowed to be propagandized and how that can be used in a weapon like a public emergency. I'm not saying that it is, but I am saying that the media is treating it this way, and they are leaning into that, more so than the government, by the way, but maybe the government is catching on. Now, we're going to be taking questions in the second half of the program, so Ask Them All in Caps and Miss Olivia will put those together for us. Olivia, how's it going out there?
It's going great. Do you want a question?
Sure.
So Don Forbes wanted to know, how reliable are the numbers coming out of China?
Well, it's interesting because the guy, I think I have him somewhere, the Chinese billionaire who was giving the government a lot of flack about that and their response, yeah, there it is, Chinese tycoon who criticized Xi's response to coronavirus has vanished. This is how they handle it over there. You're out of there. You know what? You're going to call us out? You're going to reveal what we were up to? Gone. So I think that does beg the question of did this start sooner and what's happening. But I do feel that the numbers going down and disappearing, everything is public now. And so therefore, those numbers we can trust that it is in China disappearing, which means it has a very short shelf life, which is something that they're not talking about in America, in the media or in the BBC, in the European media. So something's wrong there. They should be saying short shelf life. And they should be saying, you know, they should be telling us, oh, this is moving through and you want to take these precautions. But instead they're like, you know, run for your life to that nuclear bunker because it's all over, baby. This is a very, very disturbing trend in their reporting, let's say. Let's go back to RFK Jr. So he called out Gardasil, and then he got some people behind him. And the LA Times started to go after him, and then everybody started to go after him. But in this one, he got the actress Jessica Biel to help him out to lobby against a California forced vaccination bill. And there's the article and the picture from that. And what they say in a very kind of smarmy attack fashion is the actress parrots a refrain of the anti-vaccination movement, saying she's not against the shots. She's against mandatory immunization. Well, it seems like a pretty reasonable position. This is from June of last year. Okay. Now, Science Alert has really gone after Kennedy. And what they have here in this article, this is recently, it says, Robert F. Kennedy invents a new vaccine conspiracy theory, and it could kill someone. This is it. You're killing someone. So this is real. The real demonization. You ask questions, and you're a killer. you know, if you don't want to be injected with every kind of bad mercury toxin under the sun, you know, you're basically a serial killer. Okay. Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s mind is playing tricks on him. All right. What kind of an opening is that? No matter where the anti-vaxxer look, this is another thing. You ask questions and you're an anti-vaxxer. No, you're an anti-authoritarian. It's a big difference. All he can see is his own misguided convictions. You see the language. After reading a CBS new article about how young people are more depressed, anxious, and suicidal than ever, Kennedy completely ignored what the scientists had to say, that these trends are likely linked to cultural changes, such as less sleep and less face-to-face time with family and friends. Yeah, that'll make you shoot up a school. Don't worry, it's not the intense after effects which have been proven on so many of these drugs. So this is the way that they want to kind of handle opposition. You know, one and done. You're going down if you take them on. That's not a healthy situation for democracy. That is a takeover. And so the pushback here, I think, is very important for us to keep in mind as we go along. Now, a couple of other pieces that I think are worth considering. This is interesting. I found this article and I remembered this and I was like, what happened with this? March 8th, there was a pretty extensive article in the New York Post. And it said, coronavirus is going to hit its peak and start falling sooner than you think. This is where the information and the data, like the scientist that Professor Scott pointed out, this is where we were a week ago. So what's happened? Why are we on emergency status and canceling NBA forever? What is it that's happening? Did we get some incredible piece of news in between the 8th and the 15th? Listen to a few things from this. Nations are closing borders, stocks are plummeting, and a New York Times headline reads, the coronavirus has put the world's economy in survival mode. Both political parties have realized the crisis could severely impact the November elections, and some of those reactions are understandable. Much of it is pure hysteria. Interesting. Meanwhile, the spread of the virus continues to slow. March 8th, so a week ago, continues to slow the opposite direction. More than 18,000 Americans have died from this season's generic flu so far, according to the latest data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In 2018, the CDC estimated there were 80,000 flu deaths. Remember, the coronavirus, about 60 fatalities in America. This is 80,000. That's against, at the time, 20 coronavirus deaths so far from about 470 cases. Worldwide, there have been 3,400 coronavirus deaths. Again, this is from March 8th. 100,000 identified cases. Flu, by comparison, grimly reaps about 291,000 to 646,000 annually. Now, I understand somebody could say, well, you never wanted to get to that level. Sure. Absolutely. But nonetheless, we don't shut down entire countries over the flu. So what's going on here, really? What is this a dry run for? We're going to get to that in a minute. A couple more kind of nice things from this article. As for the death rates, as I first noted in these pages on January 24th, you can't employ simple math, as everyone is doing, and look at deaths versus cases, because those are reported cases. With both flu and assuredly with coronavirus, the great majority of those infected have symptoms so mild, if any, that they won't seek medical attention and get counted in the caseload. So saying it's a certain percentage of people who have it is actually not right because it's a much lower percentage because the number of people just won't go in and get checked anyway. Furthermore, those calculating rates ignore the importance of good health care, given that the vast majority of cases have occurred in a county, in a country, excuse me, with poor health care, and that's going to dramatically exaggerate the death rate. This was the New York Post a week ago. So today we got emergency this and emergency that, and you know, say goodbye to your relatives forever. You can't visit them in nursing homes. And by the way, you can't get together for, you know, 25 people at a time and social distancing and all the rest of it. Where is the great sea change piece of data that has changed everyone's mind? There isn't any. I've looked high and low for it. So there's no central piece of data that would change this perception. So we have to start looking somewhere else besides data. And the place that we can look between the 8th and the 15th, again, is the media and the political situation, and also the potential offensive against Iran. This is where we need to go. And also the dry run of a pandemic being, you know, and these types of scenarios played out by the Rockefeller Foundation and the Gates Foundation. They do these on a regular basis. Of course, we were going through details on one of the operations. What is that, 201?
Yes, yeah. Event 201.
Okay, and you want to read a little bit about just like a couple of bullet points from what they had on
it? It happened in New York, October 18th, 2019, and it was a pandemic simulation exercise to test the response of a coronavirus outbreak for the public and private sectors. The CDC, the UN, Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, World Economic Forum, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So it was about their partnership and what they found, two things. One, they couldn't prevent it and 65 million were dead worldwide. And one of the things that I thought was interesting is that they resolved that the government had to have a partnership with social media to counter misinformation during a pandemic.
This is the next piece, because what they're going to need to do with this, if it doesn't have the punch, if the stats on the ground don't add up to the hype that they're moving, which clearly they aren't, the hype doesn't match what they're saying. They're basically, they have us in Armageddon land. But since they don't have that, what they're going to have to do is those voices that are putting forward this kind of information are going to receive the kind of censorship that we've seen politically and otherwise in alternative media, which they ramped up dramatically after the 2016 election, because so many things that were attributed from WikiLeaks, you know, whose founders in prison and awaiting extradition to the United States now because on the charge that basically, hey, you know, he leaked records that the United States found sensitive. Well, he's not a United States citizen, so how does that work? And Chelsea Manning, who recently got out of prison, who was a major leaker.
After attempting suicide.
Yes, and, you know, they had to let her out of prison, but that's a harassment campaign that's going on there. So those were kind of bellwethers for the alternative media. And by the time you get down through the levels, they were censoring people left and right. And some of the people, you know, even the InfoWars channel, which like them or not, they certainly have a right to be on social media. So they got thrown off wholesale along with a number of groups. And a lot of people on the left said, well, good. You know, a lot of those right-wing tactic guys and loudmouths and shock jocks, they got thrown off of YouTube and Facebook. That's good. And then their own people started getting thrown off. So, you know, as soon as you started to mention something on the left side that the this thing that's coming in doesn't like, those guys started to get barred. So it was not just a right left issue. It was both. So whatever is controlling that, the social media companies, for example, Facebook, Google, and all the rest of it, we're on YouTube here, which runs Google. And that's why I always say, make sure you sign up for the newsletter, because one day they might just take the channel down. And you go to darkjournalist.com to do that. But I think it is important that we bring this to a point now. Well, we have the voices out there. We've got Catherine Austin Fitz. We've got Professor Scott Other people are doing great research on this, like Professor Farrell, or Dr. Farrell, and Gigi Young did an excellent presentation on this yesterday. Congratulations, Gigi. So, you know, we have the voices and we have the people, so let's remember to get behind them and really give them that opportunity. Okay, let's get into where the disconnect is between the official story and what's happening on the ground, and also the forces that are around us politically, financially, media-wise, the deep state propaganda aspects. So recently, we had a story come out about the Davos crowd. Now, this is the World Economic Forum. And what's happening here, for the most part, as far as I can tell, is these billionaires are getting together and making their plans for consolidating power. There's just no denying it. And the optics are terrible because they go to this incredibly, you know, they have all these machine gun guys ready to defend them while they're trying to take away everyone's guns. And they're using private jets to get in there when they're trying to make everyone else go green. I mean, it's just some of the worst. If I were their PR person, I would sit down and say, do you realize how bad you look? Mm-hmm. And, you know, they roll these guys out like Tony Blair, who basically helped destroy Libya, and Bono, who was shilling for Monsanto before everybody died of cancer, and who Apple gave $30 million, included U2's album on your iPod, whether you wanted it or not.
With that iTunes. Horrible picture.
Yes. Ugh. And it was a disaster. I mean, it's a terrible album. Mm-hmm. When you have to force your music on somebody, you're doing something wrong. Of course, we have Gates here, and that's Clinton over there representing a variety of interests here, but this is not the good leadership that we need in the world. And these are the people behind so many of the things that we're seeing. So there's a large disconnect between the power movers and shakers and what we need to see in society. And the only way we're going to get there is by really helping the voices, getting behind the people that are doing the right thing on the ground. And also kind of withdrawing and shunning from these other things because they're getting too powerful and society is suffering as a result. That's another shot of Bono here. And, you know, they might have told him, hey, all that work you're doing with Monsanto is going to save Africans. And by the way, when we go in there and give them all these vaccines, it's going to help them. You know, maybe they didn't tell him that that by and large is more of a sterilization program than anything else. And maybe they didn't give him the stats on the vaccines either. But in any case, guys like Bono have become the kind of front men for these types of operations. And that's a disaster because, you know, if anything, we need socially conscious artists to bring up these things and really challenge the establishment, not be, you know, paid off and looking for what Catherine Austin Fitz called pet treats, all like that. And so just to remind everyone that Monsanto there is paying up now through Bayer for all the cases of Roundup cancer. Well, how often do the alternative media, say from 2012 on, and a number of very good documentary makers and other people say that Monsanto and Frankenfood and all that was unsafe? But the mainstream media pushed it and the politicians pushed it. But you know what? There came a point where people on the ground said, no mas. And we might get to that with this push too, if they keep it up at this level. We'll see. You know, right now we have to watch a lot of the action with the middle managers and see what they do. But if they move into these emergency power territories, we have to see, you know, make damn sure that they have the consent of the public to do certain things. Now, let's look at some of those emergency powers, shall we? A couple of quick things about X in relation to this. I don't want to forget about this. I have so many show and tell things here today. This one is, you know, a picture says 1,000 words. First of all, from today, Mexico holds big music festival despite coronavirus concerns. I mean, look at that. You think all those people are going to drop from coronavirus? I don't think so. Also, the people who push for illegal entry into the country, by all of these various foreign nationals coming in. You know, how can they want this whole illegal alien idea coming in if they know for a fact that those people aren't going to have vaccines? And, you know, if they believe in vaccines so much, how do they equate these two things in their mind? Why don't they want to go through normal legal immigration channels when they promote this? Both Republicans and Democrats don't. The only person who said anything about it is Trump. And you know, he hasn't said it in the most ideal way. But when he's brought it up, you just get called a racist, and that's the end of it. Well, you know, the border is a very interesting issue because drugs get run through the border. And the CIA coordinates with a lot of the drug running at the border. So we have to look at that if we're going to be real about this. And if you're going to talk about things like closing borders because of a health pandemic, then you're going to have to look at these other issues too. As a matter of fact, everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist program. We're going deep on deep state propaganda wars and the kind of elite emergency op that is being trotted out here, along with the kind of legitimate health concern parts, and trying to put those two together and see if there is some force, some deep state force that is piggybacking on this crisis to try to get some interesting details about how the public responds and how much of their freedoms they will give up. Remember, it's a constitutional democracy. And so if you don't, if you basically don't give them the ability to do it, they can't do it. And this is a big point, that they are accountable to the citizenry. And this is something that sometimes comes at the point of a bayonet, for sure. So hopefully it doesn't come down to that. But the establishment must be answerable to the people on the ground. So that's why we need to get real transparency from them and not just trust them blindly. And at the same time, you know, I want to balance that out by saying, watching what the middle managers do and trying to work with this crisis, you know, that's fine. That's fine. And I think that we should do that. But I think that we need, red flags need to go off when you get outside of constitutional territory, when they start shutting everything down. Then where's the data to shut it down? If you don't have the data, you can't shut it down. That's the fact. So this is what it comes down to. Yes.
Christy Belly just said, did anyone see the red folder passed off to the green folder on MSM? Yes. We still don't have an explanation for that. It's crazy.
Yes. Yes. Well, there's a lot of very unusual things like that, going on.
That was weird.
And I have to tell you that it does seem to form part of a pattern of what's happening and some of the messaging that's going on underneath the surface. Now, okay, May 21st, 2012, let's bring this up. The NDAA, which I was just talking about from this year, we spent $750 billion. And by the way, the other thing we get in that NDAA is the ability to maintain the state of emergency that was originated during 9/11. And we've had that every year, and Professor Scott does a good job of pointing this out, for 19 years. So we're under a state of emergency every time they renew that. So they made some noise about, oh, we're going to take that out because what it says is they can basically wiretap you without a warrant and all the rest of it because they're still using the terrorist clause from 9/11. Well, that's not constitutional. So they made some very cosmetic changes and saying, yeah, we're going to fix that up. And you know, nothing changed. So we're still stuck with it. But anyway, in 2012, the NDAA legalizes the use of propaganda on the public. This was a story that was well-researched across the board. Everybody knew that this happened. Quote, the newest version of the National Defense Authorization Act includes an amendment that would legalize the use of propaganda on the American public. It's undeniable. The amendment proposed by Mac Thornberry and Adam Smith passed the House last Friday afternoon. And it nullified the protections that we had previously, that when the CIA went out, that they could propagandize other countries, sure, for intelligence purposes, but they could not propagandize us in our own country. I'm sure they were doing it anyway. But they wanted legal sanctioned to do this, and they got it in 2012. So now here we are. So the question is, are they using that to propagandize us now? And my reasoning behind that is because the data on the ground isn't supporting the hype that they're putting out. So fine, you're operating under a state of emergency. Just give us the facts that support that state of emergency. And a little more on that. May 22nd, 2012. Is Congress really authorizing U.S. propaganda at home? The answer, yes. So they're authorized to do it. Hence, it becomes a talking point, a conversation point to be worked out in a big story like this. Progressives are worked up over a new brainwashing law for misguided reasons. They're like, propaganda at home is good for you. You should be propagandized. Make you feel better. This is the kind of problem with the media. And the media has become kind of a sick joke. And now they're really well-paid sick joke. So they just sit there and, you know, Rachel Maddow will sit there and promote war with Russia, you know, when it's supposed to be a liberal channel. They're not supposed to be that into war. But they're, you know, desperate for war. And as she sits there, her, you know, the millions go up in her bank account. She'll say anything that they want to hear, basically. But it's lies. I mean, MSNBC and CNN are the biggest liars out there. Okay, I want to get into a little bit of ex-steganography and then go back to Bill Gates here. You're watching The Dark Journalist Show. You're on X episode. This is deep state propaganda and all the elite emergency measures and the seizure of power with emergency powers. And maybe this is the dry run for that. We've seen some unusual things on the ground that do represent activity that needs to be explained somehow, shall we say. But since this is the X series, let's look at some interesting X combinations here. February 21st, they've been warning now through the Gates Foundation about something called Disease X. WHO, the World Health Organization, has been warning about this. And so finally, Bloomberg came out and said, coronavirus may be disease X that health experts warned about. So the X steganography in this case is being used in this kind of perverse fashion where, you know, we find it showing up in so many, and we've made so many episodes about how X represents the various secret programs being moved through government agencies. When you see it pushed out there like this, I think it goes beyond just naming something X for unknown and falls in with that X steganography. And it feels like the X steganography is, in this case, indicating that, you know, disease X was something they put in the pipeline, and now this is the dry run for disease X. Why would they be doing that? Well, very interestingly, we do have Bill Gates and Melinda Gates and how they're so behind these vaccinations and all the rest of it. And I'm going to say this about Gates, you know, in so much of the alternative side, they just want to drag him off to Gitmo and try him and all the rest of it. We have to look at him as a figure who represents the very elite establishment. And so we can see through him to figure out what they're up to, and that we get much better bang for our buck from doing that. And I think if he were found to be doing anything illegal, I would like to see him tried for that based on whatever charges come forward. So I think that it's very important not to get into this kind of cartoon villain aspect with so many of these people. And then as we see a lot of people offer these solutions online, that everybody's heading to Gitmo and there's some secret white hats are controlling the situation. None of that is happening. And they've promised, now they're going back to the mass arrests thing on this around the independent media. It's the biggest joke in the world. There's never been mass arrests. And, you know, we haven't seen that. We've seen the opposite, actually. We've seen good people like Julian Assange going to prison. And, you know, the explanations when those people get in with that and the reality contradicts their weird fantasy life, and we see this a lot in the alternative side, unfortunately, they say, well, it's, don't worry, it's some part of some other plan, 4D chess. Sorry. You've got a real situation on the ground now. You know, jokes like that stuff just have to get off the table so we can focus. And I think it's important for us to get into that. Now, Gates did resign from Microsoft and Berkshire Hathaway recently. I found that very interesting. Another comment that I found interesting, which contradicts what Professor Scott brought up through the scientists about how this really is going away and doesn't have much of a shelf life. I was watching an interview with Warren Buffett, who's the CEO of Berkshire Hathaway, and he says, oh, I'm always talking to Bill Gates, and I always get my science information from him, and he doesn't think this is going away by the summer. Now, why wouldn't you be thinking that, Bill? See, this is the type of stuff, when we look at other scientists, they're looking at the actual numbers, and they're saying, no, this thing goes down, it's around for a little while, it has a short shelf life. And, you know, a lot of them are saying, well, yeah, you know, you can do these different things, like you can quarantine and, you know, you can self-isolate and all that stuff. They don't have any problem with that, but they will not go along with the hyper, you know, the real kind of over-the-top pushing of this thing. Something else that came up, it was X-oriented. And this one is really good. There's a few. This one is Vivos X Point. These are various bunkers that these elites have moved into recently, setting themselves up to survive the kind of pandemic apocalypse, shall we say. And, you know, they look like bomb shelters on the outside. And if you ever look at the overhead view of these things, it actually looks like a series of graves or something because it's a bunch of concrete markers. But inside, they're highly stylized. And, you know, they're going to survive whatever kind of problems people on the surface have, and then they can reemerge and, you know, make the town like Las Vegas and have a good old time. That is interesting to me, and I think we have to look at the mentality of these people getting so out of touch with day-to-day life that they think, hey, you know, we'll go through this process and something happens on the surface, we'll go underground and we'll run everything. Is this where the Davos crowd has mutated to in their thinking? And if they have, then we need to bring them back down to earth and whatever kind of operations they're looking to move, whether it's happening through this health scare or not, they should get a dose of reality from the fact that we're not buying into it, basically. So I think the citizen's voice needs to be heard in all this. And it can't be just like, you know, that we go along with every little thing and don't question it. That's ridiculous. We have an active media in this country. We're going to use what the Constitution gives us, which is the ability to use free speech. This is free speech, and we're using it. And that's what they're going to move against, because the free speech on the ground is showing that the stats that they're performing and showing on this don't add up with the reality of how they're acting. That's a problem. And I was listening to the mayor today, and he said, when you hear things that don't add up to this, don't worry about it. Just go back to the official story. In essence, he said that. I'm paraphrasing him. But he was like, if you hear other stories, don't listen. And I thought, that's a weird thing to put in there. But we've been seeing that in the simulation that we were talking mm-hmm. about. They had to get rid of aspects of the alternative media who were running contrary narratives to the things that they were trying to lay out on the public. This is very important. And that couldn't be a more crucial area for us to look at, which is, you know, central in the Constitution's free speech. If you try to move against that, you're moving against the Constitution. That means you're moving against the citizens of America and the world. So be very advised when you go to take away people's free speech. That's what you're doing. And if you do that, then you're going to hit opposition. It's inevitable. And, you know, a high-tech version of the French Revolution is not so hard to imagine. I'm not advocating that. But I would say that the people who are pushing these things should be looking at them a lot more carefully, because my feeling is that the forces behind this are testing, really pushing their luck. And what I recommend is watching the process roll out and trying to see, you know, where it's coming from and all the rest. But I do feel like we need to keep an eye on the constitutional aspects and any violations that occur. We need to be very vocal and very activist towards this, because at the end of the day, they're going to reduce people to fighting over paper towels. That's not so pretty. Let's see if we can get things going a little bit better than that. Okay, now let's go to some unusual aspects on this. Now, recently, Ellen Brown came out with a very interesting article, and she's an attorney and a chairman of the Public Banking Institute. And she has a book out called Banking on the People, Democratizing Money in the Digital Age. I do appreciate some of the things that she writes. But she has an article called The Fed's Baffling Response to the Coronavirus Explained. I'm just going to grab some of the bullet points from this. When the World Health Organization announced on February 24th that it was time to prepare for a global pandemic, the stock market plummeted. Over the following week, the Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped by more than 3,500 points, or 10%, basically, in an attempt to contain the damage. The Federal Reserve on March 3rd slashed the federal funds rate from 1.5 to 1.0. They slashed that to zero today. In its first emergency rate move and biggest one-time cut since the 2008 financial crisis. That's very important because we've had a stock market that's been overvalued and really been cruising through the top. But let's look at the political aspect. The Trump administration at this juncture is heavy odds-on favorite to win, mostly because he's kept the economy good. And also the Democrats have trotted out pretty weak candidates, let's face it. However, if you completely annihilate, temporarily even, the economic factors, then you might have a chance at unseating him. And you know, he's been a problem, ostensibly, for some of these forces. You know, there are other forces that maybe appreciate what he's up to. But let's say the media side and that whole kind of, originally, a major aspect of the deep state had a problem with Trump, although another aspect of the deep state was supporting him. So there are those checks and balances there. So it says, so what then was the Fed's reasoning for lowering the Fed's fund rate? According to some financial analysts, the fire was trying to be put out was actually in the repo market, where the Fed had lost control despite its emergency measures in the last 6 months. Repo market transactions come to $1 trillion or $2.2 trillion per day and keep our modern-day financial system afloat. But to follow the development there, we need to recap the repo action since 2008. And she does. And what we start to learn is that the Fed was having a problem over a year ago with this section of the economy. So they may have run out of magic tricks to keep that show going. And they may have been wondering, what are we going to do? The crisis has opened up a window to inject $1.5 trillion into these banks. Is this why we're seeing this? Question has to be asked and has to be answered. So I guess there's a lot of details in looking at this. I'm not going to go much further into it, except to say at the end, she says, in the face of a recession caused by massive supply chain disruption, the U.S. central bank has shown itself to be impotent. Congress needs to take a lesson from Japan and modify U.S. banking to allow it to work with the central bank in getting the wheels of production turning again. The next time the country's largest bank becomes insolvent, rather than bailing banks out, Congress should nationalize them. The banks could then be used to fund infrastructure and other government projects to stimulate the economy. This is interesting because they're relying on the bailouts and they're taking everything to that brink again and saying, we can get bailed out like we were in 2008. However, in 2008, they almost tanked the entire world global economy. So this has to be looked at again in relation to this. Yes.
People aren't going to put up with it. Not this time.
I think we've seen this movie, and we've also seen deep events like 9/11, and we've seen the 2008 crash. And through history, we've seen a number of deep events from Watergate through to the Iran-Contra crisis. You have to be able to look at these things and see who the players are and what it is that they're after. One of the things I want to go back to is this idea of emergency powers. Then we're going to take some of your questions, and then we're going to wrap it up. There was a quote that I was going to get to, which was a strange official in the Chinese government came out and supported this idea that the virus originated in the United States. Now, I think that's very interesting that they went to that length to actually say this. This is an official, and the Trump administration recalled the Chinese ambassador to talk this over because they were saying, what are you talking about? And yet, did he have some intel that was telling him this is what was going on the ground? It's hard to say, but it's quite a statement from a Chinese official. I'm going to read some of that, and then we're also going to look at the case of the Harvard professor who sold secrets to the Chinese. Okay, I've got that. I also wanted to show this. I'm a big charts guy myself. This is very important. This is the actual chart of the daily deaths associated in America with the coronavirus. And as you can see, the chart is kind of, this is where we are now. It's kind of peaked here and puckered out. I mean, that's it. It's going below the line of scrimmage. And so again, where are all the emergency measures for? And where are they coming in from? I'm open for a good answer. But those are the stats. These are the official stats. So this is where it is, below the line of scrimmage. Therefore, if you stay there below the line, that's it. It's over. So again, you're also in very low territory. Even at its max, it's going to 2 deaths per day. And as we've already counted, the flu accounts for 80,000 deaths in a year. So it's not adding up. And they're going to have to give us the reasons why, but we're going to have to ask those kinds of questions. All right. Now, strangeness from China. Chinese official claims U.S. may have brought virus to China. It's a weird thing to say. Let's see what he has to say. In recent days, Chinese officials, this is in France24.com, it's a French newspaper. In recent days, Chinese officials and prominent health expert have claimed that the virus may have originated elsewhere, while Beijing has angrily hit back at U.S. officials for calling the disease the Wuhan virus. In his tweet, Zhao posted a video of the heads of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention testifying before Congress that some Americans who were believed to have died from the flu were posthumously diagnosed with a COVID-19 illness. CDC was caught on the spot. This is his quote, now the Chinese official. When did patient zero begin in U.S.? How many people are infected? What are the names of the hospitals? Unquote. Zhao tweeted. Quote, it might be U.S. Army who brought the epidemic to Wuhan. Be transparent. Make public your data. U.S. owe us an explanation. Unquote. Zhao doubled down on Friday, tweeting an article that he said showed further evidence that the virus originated in the U.S. Montreal-based website where the article appears, globalresearch.ca, is replete with conspiracy theories about the September 11th attacks on the United States. Actually, Global Research they feature Peter Del Scott's work. So if anything, they're not conspiracy oriented. They are in that mid-level I talked about. They're the counter story. They look at the official story and they blow through it. Chinese officials have themselves been accused of attempting to cover up the coronavirus outbreak as police in Wuhan reprimanded and silenced doctors who had raised the alarm about the virus as early as December. U.S. officials have angered China by linking the virus with the country, with good old Secretary of State Mike Pompeo calling it the Wuhan virus. Foreign Ministry has rejected the term as despicable and disrespecting science. So on and so on. Robert O'Brien, U.S. National Security Advisor, said the virus did not originate in the United States. It originated in Wuhan. Unfortunately, rather than using best practices, this outbreak in Wuhan was covered up, he said. And that's that. Now, let's very quickly dance over to our friend, the Harvard professor, who is not our friend, but for doing this. But I like to refer to these people in our stories as our friend. While I'm doing this, Miss Olivia, what do you got?
Well, Kate Catanella says emergency measures are to roll out 5G. It's not about coronavirus. I don't think it's that simple. I think, now they like to have very complex ops where they do a lot of things at once.
Yes.
So it's not just one thing with the left hand and one thing with the right hand, right?
True.
So I think 5G is part of it, certainly.
Yeah, the 5G thing is pretty bad. And when I talked again in that Nick Begich interview, which we did last Tuesday, I highly recommend it because we did a whole section on that. And he's a scientist who can really get into some of those particulars, which I think is important. And he knows the effects from it are absolutely detrimental. Okay, so let's roll with this. That is an interesting one. Head of Harvard's chemistry department arrested for lying about work with China. That's story one. Charles Lieber, professor at Harvard, allegedly misled Harvard, the DOD, and the National Institutes of Health. Remember, it says chemistry. Then we go, American professor pleads guilty in connection with China work. This is all happening, taking place. So this story is from March 10th, but they grabbed these guys in January before this hit. The public, that is. Former West Virginia University physics professor has pleaded guilty to a fraud charge in connection with his work for one of China's premier foreign talent recruitment programs. James Patrick Lewis pleaded guilty to one count of federal program fraud. He faces up to 10 years in prison. This is something that we're seeing over and over again, which is these high-placed professors in Ivy League institutions like Harvard getting these cozy relationships with China and other governments and them pulling them along. Now, there was a scientist who made the rounds, and he was on InfoWars and a few other shows, and he said what happened was the Chinese actually bought this virus from America, and then they worked on it in their labs, and who knows what they were doing. They were testing different scenarios with it. Other people suggested they were making a bioweapon. You know, we don't know. But I will say this. What's fascinating is he was saying that it got out of their control and that that's where this thing tumbled out. But in terms of its effects, the effects that we got were pretty mild. So, mild enough, not even as lethal as the flu. Kind of illness is good. But what I'm saying is that in terms of the actual emphasis and locking down the world over it. Okay, so that doesn't quite add up. So if we look at it from this point of view, when it got out of their hands, basically, it spread around and the numbers started to go down in China very quickly and spread out. Then something happened, which is when it hit the media, something came in and went crazy with it and really made it sound like, the Last Tango in Paris. I mean, they made it sound like Armageddon, and they're still doing that. And then they've tried to make all these jokes, and, you're supposed to be like Mr. Funny Man hanging out in a quarantine or whatever. And then they had all these other things where these, columnists from the Washington Post were posting pictures of the Italians in apartments, having fun. It's like, aren't you having fun with coronavirus or whatever? And I know it was amusing, but at the same time, I'm also like, where is this coming from? Like, are they trying to tell you to be content with dealing with this and what they're talking about it and get you into this mode where you're relaxed? and thinking it's, you know, hey, it's hip to have coronavirus and don't worry about it, while at the same time scaring you to death. It's a very interesting dual perception thing. And this, I think Tom Hanks, who was in Australia with his wife, supposedly they got it. And then Justin Trudeau and his wife, it seems like all these incredibly high profile people are getting it, but it's affecting such an like infinitesimal number. We're talking about incredibly small number of people considering the population. For example, they were talking about some 3,000 odd cases in America. We have over 330 million people. You do the math. So how is it that Tom Hanks, I mean, he was in Australia, but incredibly tiny, and then the other people on the set didn't get it. So he becomes kind of the spokesman for it, right? He's going through it so everyone else can go through it. It's a very unusual operation, especially since he just played Mr. Rogers. But
good point.
Yeah, there's a kind of like a reassurance thing going on there. They might even be positioning Tom Hanks to run in the next presidential election,
yikes,
for all we know. He stood tall against Corona, and he came through it, and that's why we want him. Hey. Okay. There's a lot of data apparently here. So what I think I want to do is go to the Charles Lieber part, because this is where I think the story needs to be investigated properly. There's a lot of hit-and-run journalism on this. Let's try this. And that's Harvard University Professor Charles Lieber, L-I-E-B-E-R. In January, Charles Lieber, head of the Harvard University Chemistry Department and a world leader in nanoscience, was indicted on charges of lying about receiving funding from Chinese research agencies. Lieber was simultaneously receiving research funding from the U.S. Department of Defense and the National Institutes of Health. The arrest shed light on the relationship between U.S. brain power, the Chinese government, and funding between the two that involves intellectual property theft. Last year, a University of Kansas researcher was charged with collecting federal grant money while working full-time for a Chinese university. A Chinese government employee was arrested on a visa fraud scheme that the Justice Department says was aimed at recruiting U.S. research talent. They've been at this. The National Institutes of Health announced last year that it's investigating whether a dozen researchers there failed to report taking funding from foreign governments, specifically China. Suddenly, that scientist who came out and said, these guys bought this in America, took it to China, and it got out of their hand. That starts to sound like a good origin story for how this happened. And like I said, I don't have proof, but we do know that the professor's in jail, as are a number of other academics. So those cases will be very interesting for us to watch in terms of the origin. In the meantime, without the origin, I would like to say this, that the seizure of emergency powers, like what happened on 9/11, were planned out in the 1980s by Oliver North and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld. And Rumsfeld, at the time, was the CEO for a pharmaceutical company. And that's the group that made aspartame. So they were called in to work on continuity of government, and they changed continuity of government rules during that period, which were originally to survive in the case of a massive nuclear attack. You'd have the secondary government set up underneath. Long story short, what they did is they worked out and sketched out a program with Oliver North and George Bush Sr. called Rex 84. Rex 84 was a plan to round up the citizenry of the United States in the event that we had taken an action that was unpopular, like going to war in Central America with the Sandinistas, which was a highly unpopular policy. And that's where we got the Contras and the Iran-Contra affair. And I could talk to you about that all night, frankly, because the links around it are gigantic. But I think we need to think about this a little bit, because Rex 84 was the plan that they had on the shelf. And it was about rounding up Americans and putting them in detention centers because they were disagreeing with a certain kind of a policy. So whenever we get around things that say, you know, quarantines or, you know, you need to not have social gatherings and things like this. We have to go back to programs in the past where they have thought this is what we're going to utilize. That was a Rex 84 created under the idea of seizing emergency powers in a situation like a war with Central America. Now, medical emergency powers that have been exercised, you know, when things like SARS hit or even the scares around Ebola, they instituted pretty minor league stuff. They didn't institute this. So this is new. And they may have figured out it would be very hard to get emergency powers in other situations. They tried it with terrorism and they got a lot. They got the TSA at airports and they got these types of reforms that gave them more centralized power and took away power. And if you look, many of the reforms in creating the Department of Homeland Security are entirely unconstitutional. They're not supposed to be able to go through various local police records of people. That's all been privileged in the past. Now it's all synthesized and the federal authorities have access to it. So they're getting outside of the circle of constitutional government there. And because we find ourselves faced with these sweeping emergency powers now, which, you know, and they're impacting situations. And they passed a bill to try to make it easy, right? And they said, well, don't worry, we're going to give you like daycare and things like that. And we'll make companies do that. But then if you look closely, if those companies have more than 500 employees in that bill, then they don't have to do it. So really the vast majority of people are basically being asked to go along with this program without the data. And they really are the ones who are suffering financially from it. So these people, if they're going to seize those types of emergency powers, they're going to have to produce more evidence for what they're talking about. The evidence on the ground doesn't support the bigger picture that they're rolling out and the kind of hysteria. But remember, the media can get away with hysteria, whereas the government officials are accountable every 2 years or 4 years at the ballot box. So the media are the ones to watch here. Who is motivating the media to do this? That has to become the central question. And with that, Ms. Olivia, we're going to take a few questions.
So on that note, Mr. Yes. Wolf was asking, I think it's important to ask yourself, who exactly is the deep state? Can we talk about that for a second? And I'd like you to mention Aaron Russo.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I think it's important.
Well, the deep state, it goes back to, it's how Professor Scott defined it. Professor Scott now is a researcher who's originally a Canadian diplomat who came here and taught. And along the line, he experienced the whole whitewash of the Kennedy assassination and looked into it and realized the Warren Commission was lying. So Professor Scott started to see the CIA and organized crime role and how they coordinated with each other. And then he started to write about that. And then these committees came out in the 70s that were questioning that role of the CIA with the mafia also. So his work enjoyed a kind of, you know, people really started to put him in the spotlight. And what happened was he started to go very deep, like more deep than people like Bob Woodward and that ilk, who would go to a certain level and leave off what was really going on. And Professor Scott's work really took us in a direction of understanding the CIA's role in creating assassination programs and how that was basically ruining American democracy. And many congressional committees called him as a major force to help with the kind of when they were looking into how drugs were being run into the country and how a secret government was being formed. You know, Professor Scott was a go-to person. So he wrote a book called Deep Politics and the Death of JFK, and that introduced this idea of deep events and deep politics. By the time you get into the 2000s, he coins the term deep state, and he writes American Deep State and The Road to 9/11, and he really gets into these forces. And what he says the forces are, you know, organized crime is in the deep state. Wall Street and the oil interests are in the deep state. And then the intelligence agencies are in the deep state. But then he pointed out something else, which he said, the contracting agencies that the intelligence agencies bring into work and that they contract work out to and use as independent contractors, they're an interesting part of the deep state. Groups like Booz Allen Hamilton, for example, who will operate outside of the rules of any government because they're just a contracting agency. We've seen that with Blackwater and other mercenary groups. So the final level that Professor Scott points out as being core to the deep state are those who manage extreme wealth. So you've got extreme wealth from Wall Street and oil companies and other energy companies, and then the groups that are managing that. So between that organized crime and intelligence, it forms its own state, its own system. And that's the covert body in the deep state. So a lot of times you hear this idea, you know, it's kind of a fantasy idea around, as this is on the independent side, the mainstream media doesn't even like to talk about the deep state. But on the independent side, you hear these things from people who don't understand anything about the deep state, and they'll say, well, we're going to go bomb the deep state in Iran. And I've pointed out so many times, first of all, the whole reason it's a deep state is because you can't do anything to it. It's deep. If it were a public state, you could bomb it. But since it's a deep state, you can't. You have to look for its trail. So one of the authors that Professor Scott appreciated, who was trying to describe the deep state, said that you can think about it as an iceberg, which is you can see the top of it, but the larger iceberg is under the water there. But Professor Scott said, you know, the way you want to think about it, and he's been on this program many times, I've spoken to him many times, and I consider him a kind of a foundation voice for dark journalism. We did one episode in particular called the Doomsday Network, and don't be afraid of the name. That was the actual name of the group that ran the continuity of government. And I highly recommend that if you want to understand that. It's available on this channel. But what he said is you have to think of it like a weather system. So it comes together for a certain purpose to change a policy, and then it disbands and it goes away so you can't see it, and then it comes back together. So this idea that you can go and get them is kind of hard. They might have some representatives in the public at times. You know, like we've seen people like Oliver North or Dick Cheney, Rumsfeld, but the deep state is a very large force and system that remains pretty well hidden at this point. And certainly one of the key figures, groups that operate as the deep state is a major part of the Central Intelligence Agency, which, as we know, has been skirting the Constitution since they were invented in 1947 with the National Security Act. So this is kind of an important thing for us to be looking at, I think, in the grand scheme of things. Yes.
You didn't actually talk too much about Aaron Russo and that important interview online, which I recommend everybody watch.
It's fantastic. Aaron Russo was a movie producer, and he produced the Eddie Murphy movie.
Trading Places.
Amazing movie. And a number of others, including The Rose and other stuff like that. But he decided that he was going to form a new political party, and he ran for governor of Nevada. And one of the Rockefellers came to him and really was interested in this idea that he was forming a new party. And they became friends, and he started to spill things out to him. But one of the things that he was talking about was he predicted 9/11 was going to happen about a decade before. And he told him how it would roll out and all the rest of it. And then he said that what they wanted to do the most was make sure that all money was digital and that people could be chipped and all the rest of it. So, you know, Russo died of cancer. He was a great voice around this, but he gave us such a snapshot in that conversation with Rockefeller. And there is still a video of his interview out there, Aaron Russo. I highly recommend it, but just absolutely fascinating character.
And the psychology of these people,
yes,
behind, who have patience and discipline. They do everything for the long term.
Right.
And the long term goal is a new world order.
Yes. Well, the new world order is such a central piece of this. And the term has been really used heavily, but bringing on the NWO, their version of a new world is basically like Zbigniew Brzezinski put forward, which is technocrats and bankers running the world and dividing the world into economic zones. And so they wanted the North American corridor to be Canada, Mexico, and the United States. The problem was there's a constitution in the United States, and they're like, how do we get rid of that? Because the constitution is a huge advance for humanity, and what they wanted to do was basically create these kind of slave zones, the Asian economic slave zone, the European zone, you know, and having the bankers and the technocrats run it. And then if everyone's on digital currency and you get out of line and you form like a protest, they just shut your money off and it's over. You remember when they did that with Assange, he was taking his donations through PayPal and they just cut that PayPal account out. And this is the way they want to do it. That's why it's important to keep paper money. Interestingly enough, with this whole Corona thing, remember the whole piggyback aspect that Professor Scott outlined that we discussed earlier? They've been rolling in this idea that, hey, the coronavirus could hang out on money. We really should go into digital money because, you know, paper money can be bad for you and spread germs. We've been using paper money, you know, for eons here. And the idea that suddenly we have to get rid of it and use this digital system instead shows that they're setting up the digital wallet train tracks and they don't want anyone to be able to get out of that. So that's a danger to personal liberties as well. So there has to be a lot of emphasis and pushback on that. Yes.
Yes. And Bill Gates is responsible for this ID 2020 thing that's coming out.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Excellent point. There's so many. I mean, there's it really is. And they're all worth talking about. I think in this show, we really were trying to zero in on what happens with the seizure of emergency powers as an impact. Is that what we're watching here? Yes.
Sorry, I'm getting attacked by porn bots. Oh, yeah. So you have to give me a bit. They are going crazy right now.
An interesting thing that happens, but just to explain this in the stream, when we do the chats, these kind of spamming bots come in to disrupt everything, and it becomes a technical hurdle to get around. But I will say this, that you're watching X series, and this is going deep now on deep state propaganda, and we're looking deep at the forces that are involved, media, financial, political, and scientific. What's really going on here with this, and how does it relate to so many of the things like Rex 84, for example, that they've rolled out? And that's an 80s idea. That's all the way from the mid-80s. But we see a lot of the same players there around these emergency pronouncements, because when a government announces an emergency, they can suddenly pull all this power in to themselves. And I think that's really what's going on here. Yes.
I would like you to talk a little bit more about Jim Mars and the rise of the Fourth Reich and the psychology behind these. Who are we dealing with? We have, you know.
Jim, I always think about Jim. And whenever I would get on the phone with Jim, we've had some really great interviews with Jim Mars before he passed away. He was such a great influence. And, you know, he wrote the book Crossfire that the JFK movie is based on, along with Garrison's book was the other one, On the Trail of the Assassins. And he did incredible work as a Texas news guy. And just when he started digging into where these forces were coming from, he started to see that a lot of the secret societies and Skull and Bones and the work that he did in investigating them, he started to see that these were relevant political forces that were kind of creating this. So he went deep into that. And I have to say, I recommend his work. His main kind of conclusion, I would say, is that somewhere between a political element and a corporate element, there existed this kind of force that, you know, he didn't call the deep state, but this really sounds a lot like what Professor Scott was getting at. And, you know, whenever I would get on the phone with Jim, we would just talk for hours because he would get more and more into the ideas he was dishing out there. And he was just an extraordinary author. I think is a good setup for this work. It's certainly worth, all of his work is very worthwhile. Yes.
I just want to say we're dealing with like a form of Nazis. That's
yes.
You know, let's be clear about this.
He did actually, his book was called The Fourth Reich, which was a term that I think he got from Mae Brussels. And it's interesting, in terms of the pharmaceutical interests, a lot of them were actual paperclip Nazis. And that's no great surprise. There's a wonderful book called Trading with the Enemy that shows the American business interests, like IBM, colluding with Nazi interests before and after the war. And there's a huge story, I think, to be rolled out there. But no question about it, the forces that you're looking at in the deep state, they don't have any allegiance to any government. I think that's crucial to understand. Just like when we see the queen heading for the hills, you know, her allegiance is to that power structure. And, is she so interested in the democratic activity of the English people in the UK? I don't think so. I think she's more beholden to this world system. That's the kind of identity that these people have had. And it's authoritarian and fascist at its core. So when it makes an overreach, 9/11 was an overreach for a lot of reasons. But when it makes an overreach like what we're seeing here, again, it's piggybacking on something which has potentially just happened organically. And there is a regular process to track along with it. But this other thing that's coming in, that's trying to seize emergency powers and lock things down and create a kind of a dead zone as an experiment, you know, like no basketball games, no baseball games, make everything a ghost town, make everyone afraid of each other. That is an operation. And I'm sure there are people who will discover, just like the experts who originally gave us the idea that Monsanto's Roundup was totally safe, eventually they got outed as cancer-causing, and some of them got taken to be sued. But for them, that's just the price of doing business. You know, do they wind up in jail for pushing that fraud on the public? More often than not, absolutely not. So, you know, for them, it's a certain part of their budget. It's the cost of doing business. Hey, we're going to pay out so much in lawsuits for these people who die. But on our side, Monsanto and the farmers, I mean, you're looking at real people dying. So this is the kind of mentality you have to get into, and that there are aspects to it, corporate, political, deep state, that we might not be able to relate to because, you know, we think that we're dealing with. By the way, one of the interesting things about these forces is they love to be seen as helping the environment, you know. I mean, Bezos is interesting because being the owner of Amazon and being one of the richest men in the world and like going into space with Blue Origin and all this, Bezos is quite fascinating because, you know, he is somebody who is locked in with the Bilderberg crowd, locked in with the Davos crowd. And if you're going to do business, the cost of doing business is kind of selling your soul to those people. And, you know, he bought the Washington Post, which was a CIA newspaper, and he's just kept up that fine tradition. And then Amazon got the cloud contract from the CIA right after he bought it. It's like an in-public exchange. And so I think that we have to look at Bezos as somebody who's just really locked into that process. And we see a lot of them. Yes.
Okay. So Debbie Miller wanted to know, why are all the sports canceled? Are the elite willing to lose all that money for this?
This is an interesting question. What's going on financially with this? I mean, try to imagine it from the side, the way they're portraying it. We're so flat-footed, caught flat-footed with this entire thing that it's gotten out of our hands, so we need just to lock down everything. Don't even worry and don't even think about things financially. Doesn't make sense, does it? They released $50 billion in emergency aid to all the cities to cover this. So something is being tried. And like I said, I think it's something that's piggybacking on this, you know, I don't know if you could call it a pandemic legitimately, but this kind of spreading pandemic that they had, which had very low casualty figures and very low impact. And according to real scientists who aren't beholden to this larger structure and who are very well respected. He was a Nobel laureate in that case. What was he saying? He said, this is something that expires, has a very short shelf life. So that's not the tune that they're singing. And if Gates is telling Warren Buffett, which I saw in today's interview, that Buffett mentioned this conversation, and he said this wouldn't be over by the summer. They're thinking something else. But that doesn't add up with the facts that we know. So therefore, we're going to have to watch the way that they're playing this out. But what we can do is make them accountable, because you can't have all these emergency powers unless you prove your case. And if you can't prove your case, then you don't have a case. So I think that's where we are. Yes.
Johann Wolf says the start of the financial reset. Everybody's talking about the financial reset.
Yes, there's no question about it. And I think this is a crucial piece that we did cover, which is the injection of $1.5 trillion by the Fed into these financial institutions is the first step. They're going to do more. And here we go again with the transfer of funds from the Treasury into these banks. Now, they might do it and say, oh, it's on the Fed's books. Don't worry about it. They'll just pay us back or whatever. But that kind of development is very unhealthy. And as we showed Ellen Brown's work, showing that this comes out of the repo market, and it was unstable a year ago. So they're using this as a reason to kind of go in there and prop that up. So we have to be able to look at those factors. Now, I do want to bring this all around to say the reason it's deep state propaganda wars, it's a lot of this is who gets there first. And so if you have one side that says, hey, a war in Iran, that'll get us the money and that'll get us the control. If they're able to pull that off and the public goes along with them, well, that's one road to go. You know, we've seen the Bush type people do that. But if you have this other thing and they say, no, we'll come in on that. We'll come in through this medical control thing. And, you know, we'll kind of plan reactions to this pandemic. And when this thing comes out, boom, we'll go into action. We have to think like that, because that's how history has shown us these people operate. And I don't think it's wise to look at everything that they're doing on a conspiratorial level. For example, as I pointed out, there's a lot of mid-level managers just managing the crisis. And it is good to go to those guys and listen to what they have to say and to go along with what they're doing, because they need to manage the whole thing. What we're doing is we're trying to give them information by going behind all that, going through that to a deeper level of where is this coming from and who's benefiting from it, which is crucial. And, you know, they have all these people coming on saying teary-eyed, like, oh, that stock market, it's lost over $16 trillion in value. Well, let me tell you something. These guys know how to bet and short the market. So when things go down, they make money. And when things go up, they make money. And they remove the chumps in between. And very often that's us. So don't ever think for a second that they've sacrificed any power or ability. If the market's lost that money, I'm sure it was on people who are trying to get in there and be part of that group. On their side, all they have to do is short it, bet on the market going down, purchase some options in advance, and whoosh. And this is another aspect which is crucial, which is we have these machines, and we talk about quantum computing and all the rest of it, but right now, a lot of the trading on the stock market is done machine to machine. So, you know, how level of playing field is that? I suppose it depends on how you look at it. But certainly there's huge imbalances going on here. And it gets us to this point. One of the things that I talked about with Dr. Begich is he said, what you have is a dead tree, and what they keep doing is redecorating it. So, you know, Trump comes in and he's like, no, the stock market is good. Everybody invests again. But they're redecorating this dead tree. And now they have this thing, and they're going to kill the market, and they're going to reboost it, you know, with Fed money. And then those guys are going to make out. They're a very small percentage of people. At one point, when I was discussing it with former Secretary of HUD, Catherine Austin Fitz, she limited it down to a small number of people, like about 400 people who play this incredible shell game. So we have to be very aware of these things. And the way that we can do it is when we're moved to hysteria by the press and by the forces in the media and moved into kind of a casual acceptance of this mania, then I think that we can see that they need to take us out of our center to do whatever it is they need to do. As long as we remain in our center and ask the right questions and demand the right answers, because after all, especially in America, we have the tools and the ability to do that, then they have to produce those answers, or else at a certain point, their emergency powers are going to go away. You know, and I can see that kind of thing happening, you know, where it's the civil disobedience. And we have a lot of that in our DNA. And I think that's the kind of thing that you're going to see unless they come up with some good answers on this. And, you know, at the same time, in looking at it, we're all about getting the right answers. If they, you know, if they decide to level with us and the op is over, then maybe we'll learn something about this. Yes. Okay, just two more questions.
Okay. Flood is asking, how do we hold them accountable?
It's a really good question. Asking the right questions is crucial. Not accepting things on the word of experts. Comparing data. Professor Scott pointed this out. He said the media, in particular in relation to the coronavirus scare, he said the media is going on one frequency and they're giving us one kind of solution and they're working the gloom and doom aspect. And he was looking for other voices. That's what we need to do. And we need to get in there and support the people that are asking those questions and that are making the big press individually in our own lives, sharing that information, talking with people. And I'll tell you, when I talk to people, and I've talked to people in cafes, in bakeries, in grocery stores, on the street, people are not buying into this easily. They really don't like the feel of what's going on here, because they're seeing it being overplayed and the only solution being offered is, hey, if you wash your hands, you're okay. They're saying that on one hand. And then on the other hand, they're saying, hey, everything needs to be shut down and you have to distance socially. It's an odd dichotomy. They have a way out, you know, with this. And then I guess the real fundamental fear from people who understand the space is that the manipulation will lead to this idea that everyone needs to get a mandatory vaccine. We've seen this big push for mandatory vaccines, and that's really, I guess, the fundamental impasse, and that's going to be the stopping point. So, you know, and these are things that we need to be looked at. Yes.
Okay. Ms. Firecracker, are we at a deep state war?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think we've seen those. There are aspects to this, you know, I remember when the Bush administration was bombing Iraq, there was an aspect of that deep state that was really, really embarrassed that he had shown their true colors and that they far prefer doing things behind the scenes, and that the Bush administration and the Cheneys and the Rumsfeld were trying to convince this other group that, hey, we can do it out in the open and people will still like us. And, you know, they were said, hey, you know, when they came out to give information, they said, hey, we'll be greeted as liberators, right? You remember that? And Mike Pompeo tried to trot this out, too, when we assassinated the number two man in Iran, Soleimani. He said, people are having celebrations, and he showed this pathetic film. It was like this little video clip of about five guys and some party favors in Iran, and everyone else, you know, at this guy's funeral, like upset at the United States. This is the kind of propaganda that people like Pompeo do. What is Pompeo? Former CIA director. This is the kind of manipulation, counterintelligence that they do. That's why the Central Intelligence Agency should not be allowed anywhere near our political process. And they should not be allowed anywhere near the areas that they've been trying to muscle into, like the media or UFOs or consciousness or any of this stuff. The Central Intelligence Agency is an extra-constitutional agency. It was not envisioned by the Founding Fathers for good reason, because it becomes a government inside the government. And that's, you know, that's where we start to see those train tracks to the deep state. All right, one more question, and we're over the moon.
Okay. Well, I like this one. Rehoboth Farm. Remember when they first started using the term lockdown to denote protective action? Before that, it was only used in relation to prison. Is this the same thing?
I think that's a really good point. I think this emphasis around, you know, sort of self-quarantine and all this stuff.
Sheltering in place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I actually, I can tell you a weird story along this line. In Boston in 2013, there was a major snowstorm. And out of nowhere that winter, the governor, Deval Patrick, put out an edict from the governor's office that said, if you're caught on the road, you get a year in jail, which was really quite remarkable. They'd never done that before. I thought, that's strange. And then he started running things out of a FEMA bunker for a big snowstorm. And I thought, that's pretty weird too. A couple months later, literally, I think that was late January, and then we got the Boston Marathon bombings. And there were a lot of unusual things that happened that day, including the fact that there was a training exercise by the FBI going on, you know, as we've talked before about things piggybacking on other things. And there was a huge fire at the JFK Library. And then when this bombing happened and they were chasing these people, they actually put armored vehicles on the streets, going house to house, trying to find these two terrorists who were, by the way, very well known to the FBI because they had, you know, utilized them previously. But interestingly enough, when you look at that whole process, you can see that the thing that happened a couple of months earlier was a weird dry run for how you would lock the place down. So maybe it was just something waiting on the shelf, but to me, it always seemed very related. And I guess that's really, that would be my way of answering your question, which is they seem to know these things in advance and run through these test runs. And I think that we do have to be, without being paranoid about it, we just have to be very aware of it, not have a knee-jerk reaction to it. But when it becomes, when it infringes on constitutional rights, then they're going to have to produce true evidence to show that they have the ability to seize these emergency powers because the danger is so great. And they also have to let go of those emergency powers. After 9/11, they didn't. That's where you got the FISA scandal. That's why they were able to tap, you know, and bug Donald Trump's activities, even though he was a citizen when he was running. He wasn't the president yet. So they were actually invading the privacy of a U.S. citizen and his communications. That's where all that Comey and all those people and the activities that were happening there, that's all the abuse of the FISA Act, you know, which is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. That means I can, as an intel figure, go and look at dark journalists and say, I'm going to surveil his communications. I don't need to go to a judge because I have the 9/11 emergency thing, and I'm going to go do that. Thoroughly unconstitutional. And the reason the founding fathers put that in is because they said the king has always abused this power. Whenever he had enemies, he would set them up and he'd throw all these charges at them, and then he'd ransack the guy's house, go through his papers or whatever. So they set up these protections knowing this is what tyrants and despots do. So we need to take the great wisdom that they had and reinterpret it for the 21st century. So I hope that answers that. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist X series. We are going deep on deep state propaganda, and we've tried to provide some answers here for understanding what has been happening in terms of that deep state aspects. We're going to take just two more questions and we're done.
I just want to throw this out. Allison Murphy said, talking about bugging out, there was also the tweet, quote, coronavirus is dumb by Elon Musk, and the speculation that dumb equals deep underground military bases. Yes,
they do. They do call them that. Mm-hmm. It's true.
And Bo Krills said that the royals, et cetera, have bunkers in New Zealand and non-extradition treaties. This is why the Christchurch false flag happened to take the populace's guns. I have to say that I know someone years ago, a couple years ago, who made a lot of money in hedge funds and knew this was all going to happen and had a place all set up for their family in New Zealand and a private jet fueled and ready for when the
Isn't that fascinating?
So, yes. So I've known about it, and I agree. New Zealand is where they're headed. So, Josh. Josh Randall said the oligarchs are having a fight, and humanity is caught in the middle of it. Basically, it's an oligarchical hockey game, and we're the puck. LOL. I think it's kind of true, isn't it?
Josh, yeah, he's right. He's right on the money. Well, it's so interesting. I wanted to make this point about what you were saying there, because think about the kind of leadership that we have. Even Musk, right? This is a guy who says, hey, we're going to nuke Mars. You know, I'm going to be a bad mother effer and nuke Mars. Can you imagine? You know, the quality of person in leadership has gone down so dramatically. And that's supposed to be someone who's going to lead us into space. You know, and when he came up and he said, oh, I'm launching 42,000 satellites and screw the astronomers who say that it'll blot out the stars. They can still see through that. And you look at it and you can't. So this guy wants to blot out the stars because he wants to make his market margin and be the leader in space. That's not the way to be a leader. Then you're going to pretend to care about the environment here on Earth when you're blotting out the stars. You're an idiot. So, you know, this is the way I think we have to look at it. I think that the people that we have, the Davos crowd, are insensitive. They, you know, and Zuckerberg and all that, they're terrible leaders. And we have this problem right now where the leadership level has gone like this, down, like a chart, and the technology has gone up like this. So we have this big technology and then very low, ethically imbalanced, inferior, unintelligent people trying to lead things. And I don't think that they have to be acting like that, but they are that way. So when we are looking at these different people, they are not suited. I remember there was a book many years ago called Capability Management, where the person went in to all these companies and he found that the people who were at the top of the companies all had the least amount of capability and the people on the bottom had more capability. And it was very interesting to him because the people on the top, though they had a kind of a psychotic feeling for power, you know, lust for power. And so that's what gave them the drive to be at the top of the companies. But their capability level was very low. This is the thing I think that's been happening. And I think when we look around at the leaders out there like Jeff Bezos, Zuckerberg, Musk, you know, they've shown themselves to not have a lot of depth, not be very good leaders. And I think
they're cheaters.
They're cheaters.
Like Bill Gates, we know he's a great poker player. This is how he spent his time in college, right?
Interesting, I think that these people have abilities. It's it's like they've shelved their conscience or their deeper intelligence. And so we're left with this kind of unethical, very uninspiring bunch with incredible power and technology. It's a very, you know, we need the pendulum to swing back to have the good leadership, high ethical leadership to go with the high technology, because the imbalance is leading us to a kind of a disastrous scenario. And I go back to the Davos crowd because they do, you know, they've presented this image and they are incredibly wealthy and out of touch. And that's just the point of it. And so that 1% of the 1%, they've demonstrated this fact. And I think it's catching up with them. And they might be using incidents like this to gather data, even if the incidents themselves are totally organic. So with that in mind, we'll take the last question from you, Miss Olivia.
Lana Landis. Do you think Jean Dixon predicted the coronavirus with her 2020 prediction? We know Sylvia Brown made prediction.
Amazingly enough. And I'll tell you what's interesting is we started the year off with Armageddon 2020, which was an episode talking about that syndrome where so many people had predicted that 2020 would be a year like this. And I found that fascinating. And of course, Dixon, who had worked so closely with Richard Nixon and been his kind of go-to psychic and astrologer, she had told him and actually put this in a book that 2020 was going to be a year like that. I think that it's a very interesting prediction, and maybe there's some astrologers out there who can tell us why this would be that kind of a year, but I definitely think that we're seeing those types of things. Absolutely. Wow, what an incredible group tonight in the Ideas Room. Amazing things that are happening. And the deep state propaganda machine rolls along, but we're going to be keeping our eyes on it as we go. I'll do a little bit of a shout out there. Well, it's going really fast now. We have a great crowd. But we had Jim Roy out there. It's great to see you. Fantastic. Lee Veltman, a cult fan. I know Gigi was out there earlier, Dimensions and Beyond. Carly doing a great job out there. And Kishara, fantastic. A cult priestess, terrific to see out there. Liberty Thunder, the man, the myth, doing a great job. Fubar Fighter, great on Twitter there, Liberty Thunder. And then we saw Kate earlier. It's great to see you out there. And we will see you all next week.
We have a lot of super chatters to thank.
Yes, let's start there.
Okay. I don't think there's ever been this many. Charles Marlowe, cult fan. Mr. Wolf, Green Queen, ML Here Now 2020, Sir Galahad Lives, Roger Wheatley, Crystal Quark, Flood, Doc Ride, Adam Riddle, Monica Jagley, Eurythmia's Fun, Eddie Lamar, Deborah Holmes, Jessa Lynn, Cropped Locks, and Wayne Peak.
Fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Wow. It's great. It's great to have your support. And we appreciate everything that you can do for this program and for those who subscribe also. Just incredible to have your support for the work that we do. I really appreciate it. It makes all the difference in the world. We will see you next Friday. Have a great Sunday evening. And you know, we'll be keeping a close eye on this for you. So if there's anything breaking, we'll be watching it close. And I guess the last word of the night, Miss Olivia, what on earth do you see for the week coming up?
Oh my God, I don't want to make any predictions whatsoever. All I see is, I tweeted this out on Twitter, is Nicolas Cage movie marathon. And it's like all week long.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. I have to think.
Escapist.
I guess Wild at Heart is one that I can think of that he did. Certainly fantastic stuff.
Fun stuff.
Thanks so much, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, everybody.
My mother said, get things done. You better not mess with Major Tom.